Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, May 26th. I'm Ray Graff. Looking to make some improvements around the house? Well, today on the show, we welcome back licensed professional engineer and construction specialist Darren Tracy to answer your home maintenance and repair questions. Darren has extensive experience in construction, renovation, and property management, and joins us in studio to offer his expertise. If you have a question, give us a call now. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, your home improvement calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement today, and we welcome back Darren Tracy. Darren is a licensed professional engineer with experience in construction, renovation, and property management. He's a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, and he is a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. If you want to join today's discussion, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, welcome back, sir. Nice to have you in the studio.
Thank you, Ray.
You've done several shows over the phone, and I think you'll find it good to be back in the studio. It makes it run a little smoother.
It is good to be back. It's not as convenient as a Zoom call, but it's more real.
It is. That it is. And you have some exciting news to announce.
Oh, I do. I'm a member of a local nonprofit organization called the New York State Society of Professional Engineers.
Right.
And we have a local chapter. And each year, one of the things that we do is raise money for scholarships for high school seniors that are kind of going to pursue in education in college in science, technology, and engineering.
Yeah.
So we had some submittals, and we have some awards. I'd like to read the names of the winners. And this is from a geographic area around the Capital District, extending up to the Champlain Valley and St. Lawrence County, all the way down to Columbia County to the south, Hamilton, Montgomery, Rensselaer.
Wow.
You know, many county area.
A lot of miles
all,
there.
All of these counties are, any high school junior, senior is eligible to apply. The awards were just given, so don't apply now. But next spring, any high school junior, seniors can apply. And the winners, we had four winners this year, and scholarship awards are $1,000 each, and they're based on academics, but not just academics alone, based on civic activities, volunteerism, extracurricular activities, sports, music, things like that.
Right.
And so we have Austin Zlomick from Ichabod Crane High School, Gabriella McSweeney from the Academy of Holy Names, Bianca Millette from South Glens Falls High School, and Alan Conklin from Stillwater Senior High School.
Well, congratulations to that bunch.
Right.
And the vetting process, you guys go through all the – do they have to write essays and things like that as well?
I don't think there's an essay. It's as I mentioned, fill out an application.
Right.
It's based on their academic record, GPA.
Extracurriculars.
So on and so forth.
Yeah, well, that's great. Congratulations to that bunch. Now, we had a few emails. Actually, they've been coming in for a couple of hours now. And here's – all right, let's start with a tough one, Darren Tracy. This one is from somebody just named Jay. And Jay says, we live in a 1956 ranch house with all original plumbing. There's a 2-inch galvanized pipe coming out of the concrete cellar floor, rising to a little over 3 feet, with a cut-in-half old Pabst Blue Ribbon beer can over the top. The pipe is almost up against the wall, in line with, and about 8 feet from the main 4-inch drain pipe for the house. Is this a vent, and is it healthy to have it inside? What to do? And that's from Jay.
Yeah, the PBR can on the top. That's good.
Yeah, there you go.
It might be a vent. It's hard to say. It shouldn't vent inside. If it is a vent, it should extend outside and up above the roof, 18 inches above the roof. It might be something else, though. It might be an old water well supply, a point system. Often they were pounded in the basement area, so hard for me to say anything beyond that.
Okay. There's no chance it's a PBR well. Is it?
Wow. Yeah. Well,
cap that thing off. Use it. Save it for a rainy day. All right. This email
sounds pretty good on this hot afternoon.
It sure does. You've been outside working. Yeah. This is from Matt, and Matt says, "I have a few short rows of bricks in the front of my house where the mortar is washed out. I have some tubes of concrete, Lucite polyurethane non-sag type, Loctite polyurethane." A non-sag, to use with a caulking gun. Would it be okay if I filled in the gaps with that, or do I need to use only mortar? And that is from Matt.
Matt, he's probably talking about tubes of caulk, not concrete.
Yeah, Loctite, he says.
I would advise using a traditional repair mortar, pointing mortar. You might want to use a caulk on a horizontal joint, but all vertical joints, you'd want to use traditional repair. Can breathe. An exception to that would be, say, stone coping on the flat. You have a horizontal joint in between the pieces of stone. You could put a backer rod and caulk joint.
Okay.
But for his application type and repair mortar.
Okay, fair enough. This last email, and then we'll jump to the phones. Darren Tracy is our guest. It's Home Improvement, Maintenance, and Repair today. The number is 800-348-2551. And this one is from Dennis. And Dennis says, "We just put an in-basement oil tank in. I need to pull the old 1,000-gallon tank and remove about 140 gallons of old oil to dispose. It's a very big tank for a two-bedroom ranch. More concerned, I just get it done right. I don't think it leaks. It just has to go. Can I not contact the town if under a certain size tank? I worry this could get on the town hall radar. I'm not sure how to investigate my obligations to the town and find a competent contractor. I don't want to overpay, but it has to be done right. I realize a separate contractor may need to test soil around the tank for leaks." And that's from Dennis.
In the industry, they call those tank yanks. Tank yanks.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming Dennis is referring to a tank that is buried outside of the building. And he put there's a new tank installed in his basement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. No, it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't say. But he's mentioning
it's
soil,
probably
so it's
buried
outside
the building.
Yeah.
There is a threshold where you would have to contact the DEC. It's not your local town. That's not the governing body. It's the New York State DEC. I think that threshold is a 1,000-gallon tank.
Okay.
Don't quote me on that. But if it's less than 1,000 gallon, you can do that yourself or a contractor without contacting DEC. You would have to remove all of the existing fuel oil in the tank. You pump that out, and the company can come and do that. Maybe the fuel oil company that you purchase from for your regular heating fuel oil, they might do that for you. You can remove the tank, and if there is a leak, you're bound, legally and ethically bound, any professional in the business, to contact the DEC if there is a leak, and you can smell the leak in the soil. And if there is not a leak, then you do not have to. And that tank can actually be removed completely from the ground, or it could be filled in place with concrete. And if he wants to contact me after the show, I can tell him with for sure if it's a 500-gallon threshold or a 1,000-gallon threshold.
Okay, of course, this email doesn't say where he is, so it's possible he's in Vermont or Massachusetts. But
that's true. What I'm talking about is New York State, okay? So
yeah.
Regulations in other states I'm not sure of.
Well, why don't we give your email address? We'll take a quick break, and then we'll hit the phones, 800-348-2551. What is that email address?
Email is darren@westbranchinc.com, spelled D-A-R-R-E-N, at W-E-S-T. BRANCHINC.com.
Let's take a quick break. It's Vox Pop Home Maintenance, Repair, and Improvement today with Darren Tracy. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement today. Darren Tracy is our guest. Ray Graff here. The number is 800-348-2551. And here we go to the phones. We start in Monticello. Dave, you're first.
Yeah, how you doing, guys?
Good.
I've got a home that I'm thinking about re-siding, and I was looking for just some guidance on best practices and do's and don'ts. The home currently has channel rustic white pine wood siding. It's about 3/8 thick, and I've maintained it very well. It's in pretty good shape over a lot of years, but the maintenance is just kind of getting to me. Typically, if I have a re-siding job done, should I expect them to put stuff over the existing wood siding or remove the current siding, number one? And number two, is there some sort of synthetic recyclable product that I could use to do the re-siding? And finally, anything I should be thinking of in particular when I deal with a contractor, like flashing and stuff like that, that if they don't do right, I'm probably not going to know for many years down the road and then have another problem.
Okay, Dave, best practice on that is probably to remove the existing siding. And
okay.
Since you're doing that, I would advise installing some sort of insulation material on the outside, because it's a great opportunity to improve the R value of your insulation and also the tightness of your home. Products that you could use would include, of course, vinyl siding. It's very popular. I know it has a stigma of associated with it, but very low maintenance. There is a cement board product out there that holds up quite well and not all that much maintenance. That's a product that I would suggest that you look into. And then regarding flashing, definitely you want to flash appropriately around the windows, all the openings. So those are things to look for.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Dave, thanks a lot for the call. What's the stigma with vinyl siding?
Some people just think it's like fakey, plastic.
Isn't everything nowadays?
No, I mean, there's wood clapboards, cedar clapboards.
Oh, I see what you mean.
I mean, I have vinyl siding on a home that we built like 25 years ago, and we were going to install brick, but then we ran out of money in terms of budget, and we'll just go with a vinyl, and we put on a brick shelf on the foundation so that we can put brick on sometime in the future. But I got to tell you, it's like absolutely no maintenance. Maybe wash it every once in a while if it gets a little bit dirty, and other than that, then you can go picnic, fishing, or something when you otherwise be painting it.
Darren Tracy is our guest. In my neighborhood, I see people getting siding all the time, and I think it's all vinyl. And swear to, I don't know whether they've made some real upgrades in vinyl siding over the years, but some of these vinyl sidings look spectacular.
Yeah, they do. They do. Yeah.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's home maintenance and repair today with Darren Tracy. Allison is in Deerfield, Massachusetts. Allison, you're on.
Great. Thank you for taking my call. I'm driving, so I'm just going to pull over for a sec.
Okay.
So I can talk and think at the same time.
Fair enough.
I live in Western Massachusetts, so I'm not in New York State, but I don't think the building codes will be a factor. So we bought a piece of property about 3 years ago, and we recently sold our house and ready to build. We have a nice, simple design, and we're kind of in that downsizing time in our lives. And we got an estimate for building, and it was astronomical. We were told because of the cost of building materials, because his labor cost was very reasonable. So we went back to the drawing table and had a discussion, and we decided to go ahead and get an estimate for a steel-framed, steel-sided home. And I'm excited about that, and I wanted to know if you have any experience with that, being an engineer or having an engineering background, and are there any caution, what are the pros and cons or the cautions you might give us in terms of erecting the building? What kind of company would be offering this? We're waiting for one quote back. Anything you have to offer would be fabulous.
Good questions.
Okay, Allison. Yes, the prices of homes has gone up astronomically. I think one of the local trade journals that I read said that the average home price had increased $30-some thousand just for wood material, just for lumber material, and everything else is on the rise too. I do not have any experience with steel framing in residential construction. I have experience with steel framing in commercial construction. One concern would be to isolate the outside of the steel stud from the exterior, because steel transmits temperature quite readily, and you can have some condensation problems there. So, you know, there's a, I believe it's called a thermal block. You want some sort of a thermal block on the outside of your steel studs. And, you know, I guess that's your main concern. They're nice and straight. And, you know, I really don't see a problem other than the thermal block and the condensation. Definitely keep some insulation on the outside of the studs.
So insulation both on the inside and on the outside of those studs.
Yeah, you'd probably want cavity insulation, probably bat insulation in between the studs. If they're 3.5 or 5.5 inch studs, fill that with fiberglass bat insulation or a rock wool. But then on the very outside, you'd want a thermal barrier, and also improves the R value overall, like say at 1 inch thick.
You mean the rigid sheets?
Rigid sheets.
Yeah.
Either polyisocyanurate, foil faced, 4x8 sheets. They work well. They help keep the building tight. And then you'd want, you know, there are details that are involved. You'd want, you've got to have some sort of siding over top of that, and you want a drainage plane so that water doesn't build up behind your siding that gets blown in there. So they're, you know, the devil are in the details.
Right.
But in general, no, I think it would be okay.
Well, good luck, Allison.
Right. Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call. Darren Tracy is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement today. And Ken is in Albany. Ken.
Hello there. I'm calling not specifically, but well, yes, it is home maintenance, but it's a job I'm trying to job out. I've been having a really difficult time getting any masonry contractors to, well, even to call me back in a lot of cases. It's a small job. It's just it's the front porch being replaced, concrete and brick. It's only like 120 square feet, and that's in a trapezoid. Right by the street, real easy to get at, but it's just really old porch and brick is falling apart. I want it updated. I had one guy come look at it, and he gave me a ridiculously high price for what was going to end up looking like an incomplete construction job, and I want something nicer than that. How do I get, I've been using, you know, going, I don't want to just throw a dart at the phone book kind of thing. You know, I want to get someone with a good reputation. I talked to one guy that was working around town. I like his work, but he'll never call me back. It's very frustrating. I mean, I have a whole bunch of landscaping that's all waiting for this concrete and brick work to be done. Otherwise, it'll mess up my lawn that I've just had fixed.
Well,
Stan,
I mean,
how do I get some love? I understand. I understand that people are busy, that this is the prime time to be starting projects like this, but I go to some places have been recommended by what used to be Angie's List, and now it's something else, something called Porch, you know, looking online for reviews and that sort of thing. I've had some outfits that look like they could be promising, and then some of them they give only do like major building construction stuff, and they're not going to be interested.
Well, we get the gist here, Darren. Without giving any names specifically, and I think that Ken brings up a great point. If the job is not a huge one, oftentimes some of these guys who are so busy right now just say, "Well, we'll have to let that one slide. There's really not as much of a profit in it for me." What do you think about this,
right,
Darren?
Well, yes and no. Just depending upon the contractor, the size matters. But Ken, you touched on the problem. One of the problems is the season, time of the year. I mean, you're right in prime construction season. If you're trying to find somebody, the best time to find them is late winter and line them up for one of your projects in the spring, one of the first projects in the spring. So the timing is one aspect, and then interest rates are low. People are building new and renovating. So, you know, everybody's busy. Even with the increased inflation prices that we have, everybody's still busy.
Oh, yeah.
You could try contacting concrete masonry supply houses. They're companies out there or businesses out there that specialize in selling concrete block, brick, masonry products, other than big box stores and other than your hardware stores, they're masonry supply centers. You could go there.
So they might have a line on masons who...
That's correct.
Might be looking for smaller jobs, knowing what they buy.
Looking for smaller jobs, and also if you were flexible on your timing, where they might be held up on another job, if you were flexible, they could slide in to do your job. I was talking with Ray before the show. Much of a contractor's job is juggling.
Yeah.
It's just the nature of the business. Mm-hmm. You're always juggling. So if you had this one smaller job that fit in between others because materials were held up in delivery for whatever reason, that would be helpful too. But, yeah, those concrete masonry block supply houses. And also Google International Masonry Institute. Those are union contractors. Some are large, some are small. They're not inexpensive. I mean, you can't expect to find a skilled craftsman at bargain basement prices.
It's just, Well, there's this thing that the construction now. This is house was built in 1930, and I think that's from that era, and the bricks are just crumbling. The concrete is falling apart, but it's all integral with the foundation. That's a little sticky part. But at this point, I want something that's going. I'm more about having something that I can come home to and say, "Yeah, look at my place."
Yep.
More so than saving a buck.
Yeah. Well, you might have to get your wallet out. I mean, you had one price there, and it was a shocker. I mean, it's a fine line between price and quality.
You got that right. Darren Tracy is our guest. Ken, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. And let's go to lovely Troy, New York. Lauren is on. Lauren, you're here.
Hello, Mr. Graff and
Hello.
Mr. Tracy. If I may first, go Ichabod. I retired as a French teacher from Ichabod Crane.
Ooh,
so
that's great.
I'm very proud to hear that.
C'est bon.
Someone from Ichabod won. But, Mr. Tracy, I wanted to ask you, you came and helped us with a driveway project and gave us a great plan we used when we were choosing our contractor, and the driveway with the drain underneath along the house has worked out well these last 2 years.
Was this up in Troy? The Troy area?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
I remember that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it really, thanks so much, because everything is working out very well, and it looks beautiful. And, of course, we waited years and years as a low-priority project in the sense of costs of things, and now we have this gorgeous driveway after having, ditches and whatnot. and along comes National Grid. They're laying new gas lines. And they're telling us that around our meter, they're going to have to dig up, which is, of course, naturally right against the house where you helped us see we needed to have a slope away to the center of the drive and blah, blah, blah. And, we picked actually the most expensive of the contractors just because they seemed to understand and seemed like they would do the best job, which they did. So I'm just wondering, what should we say to these National Grid people who say, oh, we're going to have to dig some of it up, but we'll repair it and it'll be fine?
Well, you need to be
You
need to be on them, Lauren. Contact them ahead of time before they start the work and be around when they're doing the work and tell them that, we just had this installed to this specification. We want it put back in the same manner. You have to be vigilant.
I'm having trouble hearing you. The guests and Ray are louder, but...
Oh, really? Interesting. All right, so
I'll
try it one more time.
I'll move the microphone a little bit any closer, and I'm going to be chewing on it.
Okay, don't do that.
Okay.
Okay.
You have to be vigilant.
You were saying
you have to be vigilant. You have to speak to them before they start the work. You have to be around when they are doing the work. You
right.
have to tell right. them the specifications that were that you had in place when the work was done recently and you expect to be put back in the same manner. Those are the things that you need to do. And I would it wouldn't hurt to make a phone call to National Grid ahead of time before they come back and make sure that you're talking to a supervisor as well as a foreman on the site, because sometimes if you're just talking to a worker on the site, that may not be enough.
I would take a lot of pictures before they get there, too. That would be something I would do
would
for my
good,
own peace of
right?
mind.
Good. Yeah, good idea. My husband's a photographer, as it happens. We didn't even add.
Oh, that's right.
Geez,
mm-hmm.
I didn't even think of that. Okay, well, great. And as I say, go Ichabod. And thanks so much,
Lauren.
Mr. Tracy, because we love our new driveway.
Okay, you're welcome.
That's very nice. Lauren, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Darren Tracy's our guest. And one more before the next break. Wayne and Lennox, you're on.
Hello.
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 Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Are you on?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear us?
I can, yes.
Okay, well, then we're good
we
to go.
We live in a house that was built in the 60s, and we have Anderson windows. And many of them are awning-type windows, which you push out. There's a bracket on each side and a middle bar in the middle. And every year they get stuck because the paint, I guess, gets hot and sticks to the window. I can take a little bar and kind of pry them open, except for one this year, which I cannot get open at all. Mm-hmm. And I assume it has something to do with either the bracket or the middle bar. And I was curious if you've ever run across, because I don't know how I can get that open if I can't get it open by just trying to pry it open. I was just curious if you had any idea what might be entailed in order to get that working.
Well, Wayne, if they were painted shut, you could use a utility knife and scribe around the surface.
Yeah, it is. I've been able to handle that.
Yeah. Interesting. It's about the transition period, Anderson windows, when they were clad on the outside, the vinyl clad, so you did not have to paint them. But your windows require a painting? Is that correct?
Wayne, are you there? Do we lose Wayne?
Well, anyways, I can finish up.
Hang on, let's see. We still got you, Wayne?
Am I there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello?
Yep,
okay.
Hello.
All right, so your windows are wood windows, and they're not vinyl-clad windows?
Yes, they're wood windows.
Okay, yeah.
But there's no warping or anything, and as I said, I've used a putty knife, and they will move. I could probably get an inch all around, but I can't get them out any further than that, at least one of them anyways. The rest of them are fine, but this one I cannot get open at all.
Hmm. Yeah, all I can say is make sure you're scribed well with a utility knife at any paint intersection where paint might be sealing. And you know what you could do? It's if they're a wood sash, you could install some screws around the sash, into the sash, the
okay.
corners of the sash.
Oh.
You get those in and then grab onto each screw with a pair of pliers and pull equally with equal force on each screw and just pull a little bit and shake.
Yes.
And it would probably open up that way. That, in a sense, the screws providing you a handle. And then you could fill that back in with some caulk and paint over top of that.
No, they push out, so why would I pull in?
Oh.
Well,
they push out.
Well, I'm talking
either
about.
Either way, you want to just jiggle them.
You want to pull. I'm describing this operation from the exterior of the building, so you'd be pulling out.
Gotcha. Okay.
You could also from the inside, you could cut a 2x4, the length of the window minus an inch or two, and then put it up against the window after you've scribed the paint with a knife, and then tap the 2x4 or push on the 2x4 so there's equal force all around the window, all around the sash, so it goes out evenly.
Mm-hmm.
And you would minimize the potential breaking the glass. Also, I would suggest you do this with a long sleeve shirt and gloves in case you did break the glass. You can get cut badly with glass.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's an idea, too.
Wayne, thanks a lot for the call. It's Home Improvement Today with Darren Tracy. 800-348-2551 is our number. We'll check the email bag and then hit the phones for the home stretch coming up. Fox Pop on WAMC. It's been a long time since we've had guests in the studio, and we have a TV monitor in here that shows the callers for the guest. And, well, we haven't had to use it until yesterday for the... And yesterday I tried to get it to work, and then I forgot. And today, during the show, Darren and I were just trying to get it to work. No luck. So, basically, it's going to be a lot of surprises for Darren Tracy here. This email, which you also can't see, is from James. And James writes, the previous owner of my home in upstate planted a now-thriving lilac bush on top of my septic field. So far, the roots of the tree have not damaged or affected the system. Do you think I should get rid of the tree? It's about 15 feet tall now, and that's from James.
Probably. It's a short answer. Probably.
Why?
Well, the roots can grow into the pipes. The pipes, they're called distributors. They're perforated. So the roots of the tree can go down and get into those perforations in the pipe and plug up the pipe, whereas grass typically won't grow that deep. And grass does provide an absorptive effect with the leachate from a leach field where it helps get rid of the effluent. But anything more than grass, I would remove from your leach field.
Okie doke. This one is from Tom in Gardner, Massachusetts. What concerns should we have when contracting to have an above-ground pool put in?
I don't know a lot about above-ground pools, to tell you the truth, Ray.
Okay.
I really don't.
All right, fair enough. This one is from Jody. And Jody says, my question is about my 1930s farmhouse, which has been added onto over the years and has three different kinds of siding on it. We want to replace the siding. We want to know that, and we know that there is clapboard underneath some of it. How likely is it that the wood is restorable, or should we just take everything off and start over? We'd rather not get vinyl, but it seems like everything else is really expensive. Any advice? And that's from Jody.
Well, I would take the two outer layers of siding off and see what you have. Those two outer layers may have protected the wood clapboard, and it may be in decent shape, and it may just need scraping and painting. If you can scrape that down to bare wood, I would advise priming that with an oil-based paint versus a latex paint. It soaks into the wood and grabs onto the wood fibers and lasts longer. And then for your final two coats of finish paint, you could use latex on top of that. So you might be in luck.
Okay. Back to the phones we go with Darren Tracy, 800-348-2551. Julian is in Troy. Julian. Hello, Julian. Oh, we're having some fun today with the phones, huh? Oh, there. That's a little noisy. Are you there, Julian?
Oh, hi. Yes, I'm here. Oh,
great.
So, a quick question. I'm trying to put in a laundry drain, and it's supposed to be a 2-inch drain pipe. That's according to code. But I've only got a 1.5-inch entrance into kind of the larger pipe that goes out to the septic tank, and basically, I've kind of had to reroute this pipe because of the way this 1850s home and the laundry could be. And I was wondering if it's a good idea to put a pump to raise the effluent on a 1.5-inch pipe, even though the laundry's already above the drain.
Did you catch any of that?
I caught about 80% of that.
Tremendous.
Yeah. I don't think a pump would be a good idea. What I did gather is that Julian has an inch and a half drain pipe available for his washing machine, and it's recommended to have 2-inch, which sounds right. I'm not sure of the layout, but what you could do is try the inch and a half. Since it's already there, you can try that and see if that's adequate. He mentioned a pipe, so he might be talking about a difference in elevation. A washing machine can only pump out up to a certain elevation. Can't pump up, say, from one floor to the next floor, so mm-hmm. that might be what he's talking about.
Okay. So. Well, the connection wasn't all that good. So, Julian, if we did not get to fully answering your question, call us next time Darren is here. The number is 800-348-2551. And Kate is in Cornwall on Hudson. Kate.
Hi. Can you hear me?
You bet. Go ahead.
I have apparently porpoises in my kitchen faucet. So when you turn it on, it sounds like porpoises doing that crazy cackling.
Oh, yeah.
And then when I use the spray, very annoying. I mean, it helps you conserve water because you don't want to turn it on and listen to it.
You don't want to annoy the porpoises, yes.
Yeah. But my sprayer also, when I use the sprayer, it does not shut off the flow from the faucet 100%. The faucet keeps running, and then I get some out of the sprayer. Is there a way that I can make an adjustment or something that needs to be modified so that the faucet will shut off and all of the water will come out of the sprayer? And is that related to the porpoises?
Well, I don't know if it's related to the porpoises. Okay, the faucet not shutting off, that could be a washer problem where a washer may need to be replaced. You mentioned not coming out of the sprayer also. It could be a mineral buildup problem, so you could possibly soak.
Faucet. Yeah, it's a fairly new assembly, and the water does come out of the sprayer, but, you know, it doesn't come out full force. It's split between the faucet and the sprayer. And where would the washer be? In the
faucet, faucet assembly. How old is the faucet?
Oh, it's less than like two years old,
okay.
Maybe 3 years old.
Yeah. Kate, do you have municipal or private water supply?
Yes, municipal.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure why you're having a problem with it being that new, with it being municipal water. You really shouldn't.
Could it be a faulty unit? I mean, is that possible?
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, the porpoises is a new development, but the sprayer issue has always been there. Where you turn, you know, you hold the handle on the sprayer and it comes out of the sprayer, but the faucet keeps running.
You know, of those may be designed that way, where they don't totally cut off the supply to the faucet, so that may not be abnormal.
Oh, that seems to be so wasteful, as half the water goes down the drain.
Agreed.
So when you say the washer would be in the faucet assembly, that would be underneath where it connects to the hose?
No, it would be up in the body of the faucet where the valve is. I don't know if you have a one-handle or two-handle type faucet.
Two-handle. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it more – that's another clue, right?
Yeah, does it work? Do you have the same porpoising for both the hot and the cold?
Yes.
You do?
Ah.
Yes.
And the porpoises are only in your kitchen faucet?
They're only in the kitchen.
Yeah, wow.
Okay.
We've created a new verb, porpoising. That's what's wonderful.
Porpoising.
Well, I'm sorry we can't help you.
Well, I'll take a look at the washer situation and see if maybe that's part of it. I may also check with the manufacturer and see if that's how it's supposed to operate.
Yeah.
But, you know, the old-fashioned ones that would shut off the one and go to the other.
Yeah. Well,
all right. Well, thank you so much.
Hey, Kate, good luck. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Darren Tracy is our guest. Do you want to add something?
No, I was just smiling about the porpoising.
Yeah.
That was really kind of a problem I'd have to see.
And hear.
And because it's relatively new, it's puzzling. You know, if it's an older faucet, I could say, oh, yeah, there's some mineral buildup or the washer needs replacing, but I'm not sure, just being a couple years old and some porpoises in there. I don't know.
Let's go to Harry in West Coxsackie. Harry, you're on.
Hey, I want porpoises in my kitchen.
Done.
So I have an old house in Catskill. I'm pulled over in a garage where my brother's car broke down, and we're waiting for a tow truck. So
oh boy.
I figured a perfect time to call in.
Right. Well,
this is not and, the car.
The car show is next week, yeah, I think, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's not my problem.
All right, man, what's
my
going on?
My truck's running fine. So I did a big renovation to my old 1853 farmhouse in Catskill, and I spray foamed the ceiling of the basement, which always has about, you know, an inch of water in parts of it. It's built directly into the solid rock face, and whenever it rains, it's like a stream comes through there. I have to go down and manually start my sump pump. And I was thinking I had put a fan in the where the old Bilco door was, which I covered over with plywood. They spray foamed right over the fan so I could suck out the moisture. And but I wondered if there's a more permanent thing that I could do. I was thinking maybe a French drain with some sort of fan to pull it out. But I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. Because I don't think I can dig from the outside, which would be, that's what everyone says, dig from the outside and cover from the outside. But that solid rock is, getting in the way.
Okay, I get the picture, Harry. Right, attacking that problem from the outside might be the best way to prevent water from entering the basement, but it's expensive to do that, and sometimes there are things that are in the way where you can't do that. What I would not do is install a fan, either to move air out or move air into the basement, because what happens is you're just introducing a warmer air from outside in the summer into a cool space in the basement. And that cooler air.
Why are you thinking about a fan sucking the air out?
Well, even if it's sucking it out, that it's replaced with air from somewhere.
Yeah.
It's coming in from somewhere.
Yeah.
And that air is probably be warmer, whether it's coming from an upper floor of your home or through the band joists. Somehow air is being replaced from the air that you're
exhausting. Because that spray foam is just solid like water on the ceiling of the basement.
Yeah, I don't understand what you mean by that. The spray foam is solid. It sounds like you've got quite a problem here.
No, the spray foam on the surface underside of the spray foam in my basement. It's just there's so much moisture down there from
so
the water just pouring in.
Gotcha.
You'll have less of that problem if you shut that fan off. As I mentioned, you're bringing a warmer air in, and cool air cannot hold as much water vapor as warm air. There's more moisture and warmer, so it goes down there and it cools and it condenses. It's a problem. So you could seal up the perimeter and treat it like a tight basement. And if you could get that sump pump working on an automatic float system so you didn't have to go down there and plug it
in.
I'm
going to get a new sump pump.
Yeah. What type of floor do you have in the basement? Is it dirt or concrete?
Well, it's a thin layer of concrete over dirt and then stone. Like, literally, it's just solid rock on half of it. And the water, when it rains, it's like it pours out in multiple places. Is there a way to seal that up from the inside?
I always preach on these shows, if you can get a vapor barrier down in the basement and then cover it up with pavers or concrete, that really goes a long way to improving the amount of moisture in the basement. Also, if you can point up the exterior walls, you said it's 1800s home. You want to seal up those walls as well as you can so moisture doesn't come in. And then if you can put a French drain around the perimeter to a sump pump with an automatic float system and pump out, that's about the best you can do.
Harry, thanks a lot for the call. I think we lost Kathy in Queensbury a couple of times here. Kathy, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yep. Go ahead.
Okay. I live in a log home that is, it's kind of built into a hill. So the kitchen and the main living room area are actually on the upper floor of the house. The subfloor of those areas squeaks terribly. We are in the process of renovating the kitchen and the living room, including putting down new floors. What we've discovered is the subfloors were just nailed down. So we're definitely replacing the nails with screws to try to hold that subfloor down tighter. We were debating whether we should also use some like construction adhesive to actually glue the subfloor down before we screw it down. My concern with that is if we ever need access again, it's glued down. So I'm just wondering what your recommendations might be for fixing a squeaky subfloor while we have everything torn apart and have total access to it.
We only have about a minute here, Darren, but go ahead.
Okay, Kathy. Yeah, I'm not really clear on what you mean by a leaky subfloor, but I will.
Squeaky, I think.
Oh, squeaky.
Yes.
Okay, squeaky. Yes, you want to glue and screw that subfloor. And,
yeah.
And if you ever need access, you could cut a hole in between the floor joists at that time, or you could put a hatch in while you're in reinstalling the subfloor. But definitely glue and screw.
Good, Kathy?
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, good. Oh, great. So does that work for you? You're doing the right thing.
We're doing the right thing. I just wanted to make sure.
Good job. All right, we'll leave it there. And, Kathy, thanks a lot for the call. Darren, if people want to find your business online, how do they do that?
They can look on Facebook, West Branch Engineering and Consulting. I have my most up-to-date information there. I do have a website, West Branch Engineering. You can Google search that information there, and then my email address, which I gave previously, Darren@WestBranchInc.com. Any of those three methods that can contact me, or I do have some tip information on the West Branch Engineering on Facebook. Basement floors, how to take care of that, drainage improvements, some interesting tips there. So
terrific. Well, man, thanks for being in the studio once again, and we will talk to you soon, Darren Tracy. Support comes from Norman Rockwell Museum in historic Stockbridge, Massachusetts, presenting the final days of the internationally touring exhibition Imagining Freedom. Advanced time tickets at nrm.org. And Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. Once again, thanks to Darren Tracy for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the great calls. Apologies if we didn't get to your question today. We will have Darren back again real soon. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our returning engineer. Phones answered by Ed Rosen, our producers, Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. You ready? Are you set? Do you have your trowels? Do you have your hose? The hose and the hose. It's gardening tomorrow at 2 p.m. Join us right now. Stand by for 51%.